Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the January 30th broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Italian Tomatoes. It is Friday, January 30th. I'm your host, Bob Curie, and tonight we're going to talk about the job search experience. I think this is a good topic to discuss because despite the press accounts of an economic recovery, if you look carefully at the business press, you will see a lot of stories about layoffs, about restructurings, and all types of activities that result in involuntary displacement from jobs. And so to kick off of our discussion tonight, to always start with a little mood music, and I'm going to use a song from Four Weddings and a Funeral to sort of describe the psychology of the job search experience.
They're writing songs of love, but not for me. A lucky star's above, but not for me. With love to lead the way, I found more clouds of gray than any Russian guarantee. I was a fool to fall and get that way.
Well, the reason I chose that is that because of the importance of jobs in people's lives, people are kind of married to their jobs. So when an involuntary departure occurs, it's a painful experience emotionally as well as financially. So the involuntary departure, whether it is a layoff, it's a restructuring, it's an early retirement, it can be traumatic. Now, there's a financial aspect to that, obviously, loss of compensation, loss of benefits, but there is a social component to all of the pain as well. Work is a source of self-worth, friends, colleagues, networking, a place to exchange ideas, a place to express yourself creatively, a source of social support. And we rely on work to integrate with society. I mean, we get our health insurance through it for the most part. When you interact with everybody, they want to know your work number. Having a place of employment indicates reliability and responsibility, and those are traits we all want to be identified with. So we're going to cover the bases of the job search experience. We're going to try to keep it light and focus on the humorous side of something that on the whole isn't very funny. And the way the show is structured, I'm going to go through some prepared remarks with clips, and then I'm going to recognize anybody who has called in, and we can have a chat about the content of the show or anything else that they want to talk about. And I want to give a shout out to the guys from Free Fire Friday, whose show I just came from. That is on Friday evenings at 8 o'clock Central Time. And they talk about anything to do with firearms and, you know, kind of related topics, Second Amendment, the outdoors, stuff like that. Very entertaining show, and you'll get to hear them in all likelihood once the prepared part of the show is over. Now, despite the media buzz of a healthy economy, layoffs, mergers, restructurings, and downsizing are continuing to occur. IBM is going to go through a very big one during the month of February, and a lot of their notices have already gone out. It's not clear how many jobs will be affected, but it is rumored to be in the thousands. My own experience, I took an early retirement package from American Airlines, which people may recall went bankrupt and went through a merger, and it is in a continual process of restructuring because of that merger. Job losses are rippling through the oil patch. Apache, BP, Schlumberger, Halliburton have announced job losses, and then they can occur anywhere. I think McDonald's just announced one at their corporate headquarters. The competitive environment for many companies is very tough, and when they encounter tough times, it seems like the instinctive thing to do is to lay people off. So how does this all start? And I'm afraid that it starts, and like I said, I'm going to try to be humorous about this, but it's not all that funny. It starts with the conversation, and obviously I'm joking with this clip a little bit, but the conversation kind of goes like this.
This has got to be the saddest day of my life. I called you here today for a bit of bad news. I won't be able to see you anymore because of my obligations and the ties that you have. We've been meeting here every day. And since this is our last day together, I want to hold you just one more time. When you turn and walk away, don't look back. I want to remember you just like this. Let's just kiss and say goodbye.
You don't actually get kissed, but what you do get is, hopefully, you get some kind of golden handshake, a severance package that includes a cash severance payment, maybe some benefits, insurance coverage, something to tide you over in your job search, which, of course, is a very traumatic experience. Now, many companies, responsible companies, will offer outplacement services, and my advice on that is to use it because the counselors that you meet there are going to be more likely to be people-oriented than anybody else you're going to meet in your job search. The outplacement service that I used and that I would really commend very highly is the office of Lee Hecht Harrison in Dallas. My situation was a little different because it was an early retirement, and that gave me a lot more flexibility than, looking for a job, in sort of the midpoint of my career. But they did a very good job for me, and I think very highly of them. Now, some of the other people you're going to meet are a bit of a more of a mixed blessing. And I'm going to say a few words here about recruiters, agents, and headhunters. Some are wonderful. Most are going to approach the business in a very matter-of-fact and aggressive manner, and some of them are out of their minds. And one of the things that you're going to run into if you haven't been searching for a job for a while is how it has all been electronified. The job postings are all done on the internet, on either job boards or corporate human resources sites. And the headhunters and recruiters are very heavy users of these sites. And I remember one afternoon I was in the office of Lee Hecht Harrison, and a job was posted on a job board, and my kind of skill set matched some of the keywords in that job description. Within 1 hour, I got 8 soliciting emails from, you know, very aggressive recruiters, because they found a match on their computer and they, you know, were pursuing it very diligently. And I had to pick one to go with, and I did, and, you know, everything sped along very nicely. And then the whole thing just fizzled out, which is something that you'll run into quite frequently when you are searching for a job. Leads that look very promising at first, you know, turn sour, and they go south in a hurry. And in the world of entertainment, my favorite clip of the headhunting experience comes from the Frasier show, where Frasier is renegotiating his contract, and he has an agent, B.B. Glazer. And so I'm going to get that clip, and my switchboard is not cooperating right now, as is often the case on Blog Talk Radio. Okay, I found it. And so he hires this agent to work for him to get him a better contract, and she's a very aggressive negotiator. So he lands in a position where he's almost out of a job. So here are a couple of clips about that, which are kind of funny.
Oh, dear, don't turn around. It's that dreadful woman who works for you. Who? Lady Macbeth without the sincerity.
Oh, Bibi's here. Oh, yeah. Now, listen, Miles. I care for her just as little as you do, but she is a terrific agent, which is why I overlook the fact that she's pushy and obnoxious and the most appalling phony I've ever known. Bibi, darling, how are you?
My poor, wounded baby. I just heard what those misers you work for are trying to do to you. Well, don't you worry. They're not going to get away with it.
Well, you must have heard wrong, David. They extended my contract for another year with an 8% raise.
8%? Well, that would insult even a waiter. Double cappuccino. Move it!
Well, Bibi, that is what my contract calls for.
A slave contract you negotiated 2 years ago before you even had an agent. They took advantage of your inexperience.
I thought it was a very generous offer.
Oh, please, do you have any idea how hot you are? I get offers every day from other stations offering the moon for you.
Good Lord, am I really that hot?
Are you kidding? If I were a pot roast, I'd be done.
Hello, I'm Niles, a person at the table.
Niles, thank God you're here. Back me up. Give him some sound brotherly advice.
She's the devil, Frasier. Run fast, run far.
Well, that is the infamous B.B. Glazer from...
Dear, don't turn around. It's that dreadful woman who works for you.
One of the problems with Blog Talk Radio is sometimes it's hard to shut clips off. And since I do my own production here, I haven't quite mastered that art yet. So anyway, the headhunters and recruiters can be very aggressive, and you're going to have to just develop the psychological stiffness of spine to deal with them. Some of the tools that you'll use when you're hunting for a job that I found very important: you have to have good business cards to hand out at a moment's notice, because you never know who you're going to meet and when you're going to meet them. You need to be very willing to network. In fact, I would just say network, 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 because you need somebody to bypass the gatekeepers of the formal human relations system and reach out to the actual hiring manager. The way companies structure their searches is they post jobs with recruiters and on the internet on their own corporate sites, and they're very into keywords. And what happens is, I call it the job board meat grinder. You send them a resume, and they will scan the resume for certain keywords. They don't know a thing about you. They're doing a keyword match against your resume, and it's a kind of a hit or miss process. You can be the most qualified person in the world, but unless you get enough matching hits, you may not get an interview or even an acknowledgement. In many cases, there is no acknowledgement. You send a resume, you hear nothing. Another frustrating experience is that the job boards and then the corporate job posting sites all have unique logons, so you have to create some kind of record-keeping system to keep track of all your logon IDs and passwords for the various company sites that you visit and the various job board sites you visit, like LinkedIn, like Glassdoor, like Monster.com. I mean, there are a ton of them, the ladders, plus the individual company sites. And that can be pretty daunting. So there is a lot of administrative work that goes into searching for a job. Then what they're going to ask you to do is to upload your resume, and more often than not, your resume will be attached, and then they will download a text file of your resume into a separate part of the website and ask you to review it. And it can get very mangled, all the fancy formatting and fonting and stuff like that you do on a, let's say, Word document resume, largely vanishes on a job board website in that part of the software. So you have to do your best you can to clean it up after it's been transferred from your Word document to this text editor, and just hope that it looks presentable enough in order to catch the eye of whoever is doing the hiring. And since time is of the essence, you can't spend too much time doing it because obviously you want to hit as many matching jobs that you like as possible. And if you spend too long on the website for any one particular job, that's taking away from your chances of applying for jobs on other websites. The next thing, I don't pretend to be an expert in this process. There are people that are very adept at doing it who have done it many times more than I ever did or ever will. And at one point, I hope to have somebody who is in the outplacement business to come on the show and give some tips. I would just give, as far as the interview goes and the offer process, when you finally go through this gauntlet and you land a few interviews, don't get put too much psychological capital into any one interview, because some interviews won't go well and others will go well, but the jobs fizzle out for reasons that have nothing to do with you. It is easy to get passed over for reasons that you will never know. The hiring manager knows somebody and that somebody isn't you. They arbitrarily have a preference for certain kinds of keywords on your resume, and your resume doesn't have those keywords. They are looking for experience with some systems that don't match yours. It can be a lot of things. And if you get turned down, If you have interview leads that look promising and then fizzle out, if you have interviews and you get refused, if you never get an interview, it's just important to keep plowing ahead because eventually you will find something that is going to meet your needs and where you will be a match with the employer. It's very important if you get an interview process and you get a second interview process and it looks like you're going to get an offer, to know your negotiating position, where you will cave and where you can't. And if the longer that you've worked for a company, your last employer, this process is harder. It just intensifies in difficulty the longer you have been with a company, because you kind of knew the whole corporate culture of the place that you work, and you're kind of flying blind on the new company. So, again, I'm going to use a Frasier clip here, because there is a very funny scene in the same episode where Frasier is on the verge of renewing his contract, and then things hit a snag. And so here is the second clip.
Why are you so tense? This is the best part. What could be more fun than this?
Watching a loved one be autopsied.
Think of them sweating in their offices, chain smoking, biting their nails, their ulcers churning out enough acid to burn a hole in a ship's hull. Oh, God. And to think I nearly went into nursing.
Oh, you're right, Peavy, you're right. God, they're foolish enough to let me go. Well, then, fine. There are any number of other stations that would love to have Frasier Crane on board.
Exactly.
Yes. But, you know, in fact, I think it's time maybe we discussed those other offers. Consider what our fallback position should be.
Ooh, someone's out of scotch.
Bebe, tell me there are other offers.
Scared!
Now, you look me in the eye and tell me the truth.
There are no other offers. Straight up or on the rocks.
Don't.
Darling, you can't make a deal without bluffing a little.
You're supposed to bluff them, not me. My God, woman, are you trying to ruin me?
You are such a worrywart.
Now, don't you patronize me, you sweet-talking succubus. You get on the phone and call them.
Oh, my God, hands of Hercules. What must your legs be like? Not yet. Where are we? Have we gone out?
Is it too late?
Answer it!
Crane residence. Bebe Glazer speaking. It's them. I see. I see. Fine.
Well...
renegotiations tomorrow, starting from scratch.
Oh, my God. So pleased. Thank you, Bebe.
Maybe next time you'll trust little Bebe.
Yes. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Well, you're probably not going to get an experience exactly like on a TV situation comedy, but it kind of conveys the spirit of the thing that happens. And, of course, you know, your psychological state when you have a offer that looks like it's sort of waiting in the wings, it's a very nerve-wracking experience. And sometimes your recruiter is not exactly emotionally helpful during this process. You know, obviously their financial interest is to place a candidate as fast as possible in a position, and that may not necessarily be you. Their perception might be you might be the second best match or the third best match. So they're not going to really spend much time tendering to your emotions. You have to know your negotiating position, especially about salary and certain other things like relocation, commuting distance, do you want to telecommute, et cetera, where you can cave, where you cannot cave. And then the last thing I want to just remark upon is the learning experience of it all, because it isn't a very pleasant experience, but it is an enormously informative experience. You will know yourself much better at the end of it, who your friends are and who will stand by you. You will have a better appreciation of your skills, because what happens after you've spent a certain amount of time at a company, they can take you for granted. They kind of maybe not value you as much as you should be valued. You know, lots of things happen in corporate America these days. Many of them shouldn't be happening, but they are happening. And if you read the experience of some of the IBM people, that's quite an eye-opener, where they have years and years and years of very positive performance evaluations, and all of a sudden the company encounters some headwinds, and the cutback decisions seem to be quite arbitrary. You may enjoy changing corporate cultures. You may enjoy a career change. You may enjoy a change of scenery. You may get higher compensation. There are benefits at the end of the road, but the road is painful. And so my last kind of remark before we'll take a brief break, and then I'll open up the show for calls and comments on either this topic or any other topic people want to talk about. If you know somebody that is going through a job search, try to be understanding and be a friend. They are going to land. They are going to find something sooner or later, but it can be a taxing and stressful experience. It will take longer than it should, given the state of this economy, which is not a healthy economy. It is stressful for themselves, and it's stressful to those close to them, friends and family. So try to be as understanding as you can and help them get through it, because they are going through quite an emotional experience. And so to end my clip, my clips, and my non-cooperating switchboard, I'm going to end with another clip from Four Weddings and a Funeral, which to me describes the whole experience of getting a job, being very enthusiastic about a job, you know, really getting emotionally attached to a job over a period of a number of years, and then finding that it all comes to an end.
It all began so well, but what an end. This is the time a fella needs a friend. When every happy blot ends with the marriage knot, and there's no knot for me.
Okay. Well, that's the end of my prepared remarks, and I'm going to recognize, I just dropped a caller, so I'll see who is in the chat, area code 661. Who are you?
Hello, Italian Tomatoes.
Hey, yes.
Hi.
Is Johnny?
Yes, this is Johnny. How you doing?
Hey, Johnny, how are you?
Hey, great show, man. You're doing, I enjoyed your show. And you hit on a couple of points that I found really interesting. I actually have a friend who's looking for a job right now. And I don't think it's the kind of job that you were trying to explain. It's not a corporate job. He's actually a mechanic.
Uh-huh.
And it is kind of stressful for him and his family. And he's in Seattle right now. He's being kind of tested to see if he's going to work in with the company. But I guess what I wanted to say was Italian Tomatoes is I was in the military, and of course that's, you know, a fairly secure job as long as you stay alive. But the thing the thing was when I was in the military, I remember everybody telling me, well, you know, an infantryman ain't going to have a job when he gets out. He's never going to mount anything. It's just the way it is. So I was like, okay, so what I have to do now is use the money that I get and save as much money as I can. Don't get into debt. And when I get out of the Army, try to own everything I have. And that means learning to work on my own vehicle, learning to deal with stuff myself. And I did that successfully. And that has really, really, really been a godsend, because now I own my own little business. I own a welding business. And, yeah, I have to make money, but I don't have to make money. You know, it ain't like I'm going to die. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. You know, and that's a very good point. I mean, you have to have, you know, I can't emphasize it enough. I mean, savings are just really important. And also, you know, you said that, you know, corporate jobs are different, and they are a little different, but, you know, jobs like mechanics, people who work in the building trades, stuff like that, the process is not all that different. I mean, the interviews may be a little different, but the search process is not all that different. I mean, you still have to go through this computer gauntlet. You have to have a source of income while you're searching. And for people like mechanics, I mean, the experience, you know, that I've run across in my life here in Texas, being such a big airline town, is that there are displaced mechanics because of all of the changes in the airline industry. And, you know, when you leave the kind of very structured airline world and are trying to transfer these skills either to another kind of aviation company or maybe something that isn't aviation at all, it's not that easy. It's not.
Here's the funny part. He filled out 21 paper applications. And me being a welder, I know some of the welding shops and stuff, I recommended them for mechanics, whatever. But he filled out 21 paper applications, and you know how he got the foot in his door was, he can't even believe it himself, Craigslist.
Yeah, yeah. you know, you get leads in the most astounding places, and that's why, you know, the outplacement people, you know, they emphasize, you know, cast a wide net and network, because you have to, in many cases, you have to bypass that bureaucracy, because that keyword computer search is a killer. It weeds so many people out of prospective positions that if you can find a way to get around it, whether it's a contact or some, you know, unusual way of, you know, getting into a company, or, you know, something like Craigslist, or running into somebody at a church gathering or a supermarket or whatever, or, you know, a chance trip on an airplane or on vacation or your relatives, or you just have to, you know, tactfully try to open up as many channels as you can. Because you never know which one is going to go someplace. Like volunteer work, sometimes that turns into a job, or it turns into an opportunity to meet somebody who knows about a job, and you know, and it goes along that way. But you know, you mentioned the military, and you know, the military, because of the downsizing that's going on, I think that, you know, with the amount of national security issues this country has, no one in the military probably envisioned that there would be this kind of drawdown going on, and you have thousands and thousands of displaced people from the military who were, you know, hoping to stay in for a few more years, maybe retire or at least get more, you know, types of experience under their belt, and you know, now here they are. I mean, they get their separation papers, and it's like, okay, you know, the next phase of your life begins, and it is stressful.
Oh, it's really hard. When I got out, I mean, just militarily speaking, it's really weird. I mean, after spending 25 years of your life wearing a uniform, it's very, very strange. You know, I mean, it's surreal. It's very odd. But nowadays, the guys in the Army, the thing about the Army is, or the Air Force or the Navy or whatever, is when they want to downsize, all they have to do is make stricter standards.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you step on your foot a little bit, that's it for you. You know, and everybody makes mistakes. I mean, that's just the way life is. And they know this. So, I mean, I don't know if you watch television or not, but there's not that many recruiting commercials anymore. They like to keep – there will be some because they like to keep the lower-ranking personnel in because they're low pay, easy to get rid of. But the higher that they go, your colonels and even your senior NCOs and stuff, they like to get rid of them. So, but the people in the military, like I said, they got to be careful. They don't run up a big debt. That's what most people do.
Yes.
They buy a $40,000 pickup truck, $45,000 car, and they think they got it made because they're going to make the payment for the next 4 years. And I think debt is probably the worst.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, that is something, you know, you really bring up a good point, because when you are in this unexpected termination situation, your financial plan is as important as your job hunting plan. And if your financial, if your financial habits are such that you live modestly, you have some savings, have some skills that you can market, you're in so much better position than if you have a big car loan, if you have a big house payment. I mean, obviously, people want to provide a good living for their families, but you just have to take into account, you know, these risks. Now, military guys, I know, I mean, for all my friends in the military, there is an environment there where the job looks secure,
mm-hmm.
Good part of the time, and
yep.
you take the big car loan, or you buy a lot of furniture, or which is really bad in the military, you buy a house
mm-hmm.
that you become stuck with, again, this is not very different from the corporate world, because a lot of people in the corporate world are in the same boat.
Have you ever seen that movie Fun with Dick and Jane?
No, I saw Richard, I think, put something in the chat, but I haven't seen it.
You need to watch that movie. You will die. It's a perfect example of and they had guys from Enron on there and everything. I mean, you would love that movie. You're Italian tomatoes. You would just absolutely love it. I totally recommend that movie. Watch that, and I guarantee you'll see what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that, you know, people are not programmed to think about. And when you read, I spent yesterday reading through the IBM kind of wailing wall. they have a site for, it's run by a union which is trying to organize the IBM employees, so obviously there is an agenda there, but it's giving them a place to vent. And, you know, IBM, very blue-chip company, I mean, you know, the appearance of rock-solid stability and all of that, and you have these people who've been there 15, 20 years in this very rooted, anchored corporate culture, and, you know, they believed it was, you know, their income stream there was like having an annuity from an insurance company, and at one time, a job with a lot of the big companies like IBM really was like that, but it isn't anymore. And just like, you know, for many, you know, depending on when you get into the armed services, you know, it can be a straight 20-year shot to retirement if, you know, nothing happens to you during your service, and boom, you're retired and you've got your pension, and, you know, things are okay financially. But if you've timed, if just the timing of when you got into the service coincides with one of these drawdowns, I mean, you can have a cliff that you go over and you're out.
You want to hear something really, really interesting that almost nobody knows?
What?
When you retire from the Army or the service or the Navy, it doesn't matter. You're given a choice of whether to accept the annuity or decline it. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. What happens if you decline it?
You just don't get it.
Well, why would anybody decline it?
I don't know. I think it's a trick. I thought it was a trick. But they said, make sure you, when I got out, it said, make sure you check this box. I was like, what is this? Well, this is to get, and they call it, they don't call it retirement. They call it an annuity. And
wow.
And
I mean, I would think that, you know, being in the military for 20 years is no cakewalk. I would think that everybody would know, would want to check that box.
You would think, but I didn't know that until I retired. But, I mean, it'd be like, can you imagine if you left, you know, and there's a lot of places that, like my sister, she's a state trooper, and she has to serve 30 years as a trooper before she can collect any kind of retirement at all. I mean, 30 years is a long time to be
a cop.
That
is a long time, yeah. But, I mean, the military, I mean, because of the unique nature of that, you know.
Right. Well, you're always away from home. I mean, at least
you get
home.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, the military is still half pay, and that pay, if I remember right, does not include all of your allowances.
No, it's half your, it's half your, whatever rank you were highest at for 3 or 2 years, it's half of that. It's half of your, like you're an E7, if you made $4,000, it's half of that, so you get $2,000. So that's what it is.
And that's the base pay. So if you got,
I remember
this from some of my friends in the service, you know, part of their pay is their housing allowance and all of that, but that's not factored in.
That does not account for the annuity. Again, that's where I said to myself, I'm like, I have got to save as much money as I can. If I can live on cheese and rice for 10 years, I will probably be okay once I get out, even if nobody ever hires me. And then, again, it gives you freedom, true freedom to go do your own thing, start a welding business, start any kind of business you want.
Right.
And now I have a little business, and it's fun because you know, it ain't like this big thing hanging over my head. Like most businesses, I feel sorry for them because if they don't, like, I'm having a bad week. I got 35 below, you know that, and it's cold. I haven't been able to work for a week. I would hate to be a business that had to absolutely make that money. I'd be hurting bad.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's very stressful. I mean, it really is. The clips I played, I wanted to keep it light, so it goes to the humorous side of it. But even if you look at the episode of Frasier that I played the clips from, you know, Frasier is living in this luxury apartment. I mean, it is really nice.
Yeah.
He has this astronomical rent. He loves the finer things in life, so he has an astronomical bill for his living expenses. His father lives
right.
with him, so he's, you know, supporting his father. And, you know, all of a sudden your income stops, and my God, you know, he's freaking out, as you heard on the clip. And again, it's TV, but there is real life truth behind all of that. The more affluent you are.
You know, but that's the thing. If you're that affluent, how could you not think like I do? I'm not that affluent, but if you're that smart to have a job that good, make that kind of money, and know the finer things in life, I don't usually feel sorry for those kinds of folks because I'm like, well, you're smart enough. You went to enough school. You made all this money. You should be smart enough to know that you can't pull this off forever. What happened? I always look at it this way. Worst case scenario. Hey, I jump out of an airplane. I got a parachute. But I also got a reserve. Now, these guys are looking at it like this. I jump out of an airplane. I got a parachute. If that don't work, oh, well, I'm hitting the dirt. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing, you know, it's hard to... You know, I think the best way to explain that is look at the ultimate example, the pro athletes. You know, some do really well when they finish playing sports. I mean, they save their money. They have investments. They have businesses. They have endorsements, you know, especially the real stars. But a lot of these guys you read about, they wind up broke, and they went through millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And they know, I mean, if you start playing professional sports at age 20, I mean, you know, it's 15 years, maybe. If you're very lucky, it's 20. If you make it to 40, I mean, in pro football, maybe not. Baseball, you have more of a shot. Basketball, probably not either. So you know it's going to come to an end fairly early in your life cycle. But they don't plan for it. No,
I knew a guy. I went to school with Mike Webster, who was the center for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He snapped more balls to Terry Bradshaw than you ever saw, and he was the nicest guy in the world. I'll never forget, in the sixth grade class, he came. It was 1976 when the Steelers were doing really well, and he came to the school and showed us his rings, and he made a lot of money. But after football, he just fell apart. And the poor guy, they had a reunion. They had to buy him boots to show up for a reunion. And Mike Webster, and I will never talk bad about the guy, I think he had, like, serious head injuries. He was just the most genuine, nicest person you ever meet, unless you were in the defensive line. But other than that, and I knew a lot of football players like that. There's another guy named Jeff Daniels. He used to throw us off the dock there in Tomahawk, Wisconsin. He played for the Eagles, but he was smart. He had a restaurant. He invested his money, and he stayed fairly good. But it's like you said, these poor kids, they get this money, and it's like rock stars. They just run through it. I mean, look at the rock stars.
Absolutely.
The smart rock stars are still doing it. The dumb rock stars are all dead.
Yeah, I mean, when you deal with people in the corporate world, you kind of run across all types. There are people who have very same salary, one person is going to have, they're going to max everything out. They're living on credit to the max that they can on their income. And then there is somebody else making the same amount of money, lives much more simply, stuffs a lot in the bank, you know, puts it in their 401k, doesn't have, you know, doesn't buy late model cars every 2 years, doesn't have the most expensive house that they could possibly get financing for. They, you know, you have a much more modest house. Again, it's your lifestyle and your family's expectations too. I mean, one of the things, you know, I mean, I was lucky when I had to retire because I was retiring. I mean, I wasn't looking for work in, you know, mid-cycle, and I've, you know, been pretty reasonably thrifty.
What you did at American Airlines, do you mind if I ask?
I was in the Treasury Department. I did debt administration. I managed all their debt and leases, the administration of contracts, things like that.
Okay.
So it was a financial job.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I just was curious.
Oh, no, okay. And, I'm just saying that people react differently to money. And, you know, the point that you make is just absolutely a good point. A lot of what happens if you go through one of these cycles where you've been, you know, kind of restructured or whatever, it really does depend on your lifestyle and your family's expectations too, because that's a big part of it too.
Well, that's one thing. I have been single my whole life. I haven't had a family per se. I've had a lot of families. I mean, people taking care of me and stuff. But the one thing that I know is when I was younger, growing up in the 80s, early 90s, was people were like, well, how could you not have a credit card? How dumb is that? Well, you know, I've never had a credit card in my life, Italian Tomatoes, not a one. And the only pushback I ever get on that is when I go to rent a car and I got a debit card. They don't like that.
They don't like that, no.
No, but I can do it on post. I can do it at a PX. But that's the only pushback of not having a credit card. But I've never owned a credit card. Ever.
Well, you know, credit is a tool, but again, you know, where people go crazy with credit is they don't look at it as a temporary thing. They look at it as permanent. And so I'm going to max out all my credit cards to the max. I'm going to get the biggest car loan I can get. I'm going to get the biggest house loan that I can get. And, so they may have a good salary, but, you know, they have very little margin for error. And it's tough. And then, you know, the Dallas-Fort Worth area is a very big area for conspicuous consumption.
I've been to a gun show or two down there. I bought a Colt Python down there. Just, hey, Free Fire Friday. I'm just pushing that.
That's right. Well, before we end, because I'm going to end the show in a few minutes. Johnny Kempen, who's my caller, hosts a show on Blog Talk Radio, along with his co-host Rich Disney, called Free Fire Friday on Friday night at 8 o'clock Central Time. And it's about firearms and related subjects. And tonight, what were you guys talking about?
Bug-out bags. We're talking about stocking your bug-out bag.
And that's kind of prepping, right?
Yes.
So after the big one.
your listeners probably ain't real preppers, but, hey, get rid of your credit cards and start prepping.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not into prepping, but, you know, I do, I have a lot of flashlights, I have a lot
yeah,
of canned, I have a lot
you're
of canned
prepped.
Goods, I don't have to worry about things like you, I mean, Johnny lives in Alaska, so obviously warmth is a problem over there. It's not in Texas.
Hey, like I said, I was stationed down there by you, and I bought a nice gun at Cheaper Than Dirt there, right at Fort Worth. One of the best handguns I have. I was bought right down there in Fort Worth, Texas, Cheaper Than Dirt, and
oh,
they
well,
got a lot of.
Yeah, Texas is a great firearm state. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, if you're interested in that subject, Johnny's show, like I said, 8 o'clock Central Time. On Blog Talk Radio, Free Fire Friday, he and his co-host, Rich Disney, they're both in the service, very entertaining to listen to. As I've said before, I don't know much about firearms, but that's an important part of the sort of conservative coalition that I belong to. So I'm trying to learn more, and it's a fun show. So, you know, give it a look-see. So, just to go back to that central point, if you are seeing a layoff possibility in a year or two, talk about prepping, start preparing, you know, start cutting some of your expenses, thinking about looking for a job before the boom falls. Start learning how to market yourself, because any handle that you can get on this process is, it's lead time is very important. And the longer, the longer you've worked for an institution, it's harder to make that change to market yourself. So try to get your financial plan in order and try to get your marketing plan in order.
Financial prepping.
Financial prepping. Hey, maybe that's what we could do.
Yeah, really. I mean, I think a lot of people would be a lot happier. There'd be a lot less divorces. Most divorces are over money.
Yes, they are. Absolutely.
I think financial prepping, you can call me. I prepped for another reason, but I prepped for my financial situation, and here we are. So I'm pretty happy. I think that, I like it, Italian Tomatoes.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of am there, too. I mean, I was very careful. And there are a lot of things that I decided I just don't have to have. And I don't have them, and I don't have the debts that go with them. And now that I am sort of semi-retired, I do part-time tax work to get out of the house and to keep some extra money coming in. But that's really kind of all I need. And again, I mean, but I'm 60. I'm in my early 60s. If somebody who's 45, 50, maybe that's not a realistic alternative. But the more you've got in savings, the lower your monthly expenses are, the more that you are prepared to market yourself, the less painful this experience will be if it happens to you, which my audience, I hope it never happens to you. But, I mean, you look around at the corporate news, it's happening, and it's happening a lot. And, you know, funny thing, to end with, when the big downturn occurred in 2007, 8, 9, the big collapsing sector was real estate and the financial institutions. And then it kind and then and of course the car industry, General Motors, and then it kind of rippled through a lot of companies. And then energy prices started taking off, and all of a sudden, the hot place that was creating so many jobs, especially in Texas, in Colorado, in North Dakota, any place where there was a lot of energy, was the energy sector. And now with the prices plummeting, these kind of jobs, which were havens for people looking for, you know, decent salary and employment opportunity, now they're at risk. 3 years ago, they looked very secure. Now they are at risk. You just don't know. You
well,
just don't.
You can always buy a house in Detroit pretty cheap, I hear.
Yeah, well, Detroit is a whole different issue altogether. So on that note, I think I'm going to I scheduled it for 90 minutes just in case I needed more time, but I'm dead beat today because I had some clients who got very beat up by the Affordable Care Act.
Oh.
And after dealing with them about their taxes, I'm kind of drained. So I think I'm going to cut out for the night. But Johnny, thanks for calling in, and I enjoyed your
show
tonight. And
good show, love it.
Okay, well, I'm going to just play some exiting music to exit with. So I want to thank everybody who listens to the show in archive, which I'm going to put on Twitter that about tonight's show. Check out Johnny's show, Free Fire Friday, if you get a chance. And you all have a great night.
Good night.
Night.